then I choose you.
Be cool, baby, okay?
Hey, bitch, come here! Got your motherfucking man, come here!
Mr. Pretty Tony, I mean, you know the rules of the game. I mean, your bitch just chose me. Now, we can settle this like you got some class, so we can get into some gangster shit.
Fuck being on some chill shit. We go 0 to 100, nigga, real quick.
Yo, what up, what up, what up? It's at KMGZ on Twitter. Thanks for asking, Kel's Podcast. I'm back. I'm a day late. My bad. I just ain't feel like it yesterday. But here I am today. I give my normal disclaimer. I don't know how long this is going to be, but it might be long because y'all have irritated the fuck out of me on several avenues. And I just need to let y'all know, but I'm not going to be ranting and raving. So we'll just see like how long this goes. So first thing I want to say is hip-hop is dead. That's all I'm going to say about it. The genre, I have been feeling like, honestly, I have outgrown or have been, what's the word? Outgrew, I don't know. What the fuck am I trying to say? I have felt like I have outgrown this genre for some time because, like, I don't really know what it is. It's probably a combination of things, but and I'm not going to get into all of them here because that could be a whole podcast itself. And a lot of people are going to feel a way about this, but I don't care. I feel like when hip hop went down south, it was the beginning of the end. That's all I'm going to say, because I don't know. The standards just changed. The genre just changed. What was considered, what people like, all this, look, y'all future and all this club shit, I'm sure that was great when you was in college in Atlanta. I'm sure it was amazing, but it's garbage to me. There's no more storytelling. There's no more. It's just all about guns and shooting and killing and whatever. And I know that's not all that the South produced, but lately it's been, and I'm just tired of hearing it. And I just, honestly, I just think, I don't know, maybe it ain't even that. Maybe I just outgrew it, because I used to be excited not too long ago. Like, I used to be excited about rap. I used to be like, yo, this is like when Good Kid, Mad City dropped. And I just feel like it's so lame. The genre is so lame and tired and corny now. Because, like, all everything, it's no gatekeepers, it's no lines. You new niggas have no integrity, you have no morals, you have no nothing. It's just like whatever can give you something to talk about, you think it's fly. All this AI, all this fake rap beat. Drake is the corniest motherfucker alive to me. I've always thought he was corny, but initially I thought he was harmless corny, like, eh. Dude's corny, but he makes music. People like it. You know, he seemed to have a decent personality. He seemed to be in on a joke. Like, he seemed to get that, you know, hey, I know some of this shit is corny, but I don't give a fuck because I make good music. Y'all know I do. Y'all like it. But now this nigga done morphed into, like, he really takes it so seriously and really just turned into, it just showed itself as an asshole. And it's just like, I don't know, this quote thing is beef. It's just real whack to me. It's like, ain't nothing but niggas rapping about how big their house are and fucking somebody, bitch. And it's like, yo, what happened to battle raps? What happened to, yo, I'm gonna spit the hottest shit I can in the most creative, clever way I can, and you gonna come back and we gonna judge? Like, this shit is so bullshit now. And them motherfuckers putting out diss raps and then apologizing. Like, this old fucking new shit, man. Niggas need to go back to punching the kids in the chest. I don't give a fuck. Y'all gonna probably drag me fit. I'm tired of all this new therapy, new shit. We need to bring a little bit, not all toxicity back, but we need to bring a little bit back, because the game is off kilter. This y'all doing a bunch of bitch shit, a bunch of corny shit, and trying to act like it's live. And if somebody, oh, well, you just old, nigga, I will be old all fucking day before I think this shit is fly. Like, this is some, I mean, God damn, like, this is what we come to, and all these dudes is like 40 plus. Like, give me a break. The only bright spot in it is Rick Ross is actually very funny. and he shares my type. He's old school, and he shares, you know, my type of sense of humor. It's like, nigga, you want to joke? We gonna joke. It ain't no lines. It ain't no bars. I'm talking about your mama. Talk about your fucking nose. I'm gonna call you white. Like, oh, you know, not this new sensitive shit. Oh, that's going too far. You know how you prevent people from going too far? You shut the fuck up and don't start shit, and nobody won't say nothing to you. Once you start some shit, it ain't no such thing as too far. And I just think Rick Ross is funny. It's nothing worse than a charismatic, funny nigga, fat nigga, if you know, because he know all the jokes you're gonna do on him, which is basically, okay, I'm fat on this, now what else? And he got everything else for you. So that's the one bright spot. Rick Ross has been hilarious in this to me, because he is funny and disrespectful, but not in a way like how 50 Cent is, where it's like very, I mean, it is somewhat childish, because they are still, excuse me, at the end of the day, talk about I fucked your bitch and your house is bigger, but he's not as, Ross to me, not as immature and childish with it as 50 is. 50 B is very, just very immature, very childish for the age that he is. Ross still kind of keeps it funny to me. So that's the one bright spot. But hip-hop is dead. Like, none of the rule. Like, you, how you putting AI in a verse to diss somebody? And then you got people defending that shit. And then it's Tupac in them's voice. Like, it's just very corny to me. I just don't even care. I be waiting for, like, pop music, country music, anything else. I just want to hear good music, good content. And that's the main issue with me and hip hop. It's that the content is not good. The music is not good. The quality is not good. It's all trash. And I don't give a fuck. And I'm talking about the men. On the women's side, oh, and by the way, this will not be the first time, and this is not the first time, this will not be the last time that I'll come in here and tell y'all how I told y'all something before I told y'all. Doja fucking Cat, stop putting her in the category of all these rap girls. And I like the other rap girls, don't get me wrong. I like Latto, I like all of them, but none of them are on Doja's level. Not one. Not the performance, not the lyrical, not the creativity, not none of them. You ain't gotta like her, that's fine. I think a lot of the shit that gets passed around her is dumb shit, because y'all don't really pay attention and y'all just go for clicks and likes and don't really follow the girl and really get her personality and get like the kind of person she is. Once you do that, you don't get so upset about these fan narratives, because that's really what they are, about what she's doing and what she's saying. Yeah, I just think she's amazing. So on the women's side, this doesn't apply. I think the women are doing the best work, but the reason why I'm kind of exempting them is because I feel like the women is almost like pop stars. Like, they're doing rap music, but to me it's not really like hip-hop. It's like they pop stars. That's how, like, how beyond they are taking it, how much more skilled and how much more creative and how much more energy and stuff they're putting into their work, where it's like they like pop stars. I mean, now Latto, Meg, Doja, that girl, y'all, I don't listen, God bless. If y'all like Sexy Red, God bless. Glorilla, I can't really get into her. I still think she raps off beat, but everybody likes her. She seems to be cool girl. She seems to be fun girl, so I wish all the luck in the world. She got to stop drunk driving, though, but I don't have no issue with her, but, like, I wish them all it just ain't for me. I don't know. It don't click for me. That Yeah Glow song that y'all love, I can't stand it. But I love that y'all love it. Like I said, I'm rooting for all the girls that got good sense. Okay, that's all I'm saying. But I don't know. I feel a way, because, like, I'm Gen X. Like, we created hip hop. We grew up with hip hop. The first rap song came out when I was like 7, and so it's been my whole life. And I've been through the 80s, the 90s, like my whole life. It's like the soundtrack of my life. And now I just kind of feel bad that it's like so garbage. Like, I don't even listen to it no more. I don't even care. People, oh, such and such dropping, I don't give a fuck, because I know it ain't gonna be about nothing. It's gonna be some stupid shit. It's gonna be some Hotep shit, or it's gonna be some I fucked your bitch shit, I got more money than you shit. And it's like, nigga, come on. It's like, tell stories. If you don't want to rap about all the shit that's going on right now, which I get it, you all might not want to be the fucking woke rapper, I get it, tell stories, man. Slick Rick and them, a children's story, Dougie Fresh, you know, do something. Be entertaining. It's just, I hate it. All right, that's enough said on that. Plus, I know somebody probably on the other end yelling their brains out, disagreeing with me, but I don't care. I said what I said. Real quick, get you the WNBA pass. You know, I'm not going to, like I've been said, I've been watching women's basketball on both levels since, well, the WNBA started, I think, in like 96, 97, but I've been following the women's game since I was 10 years old, women's college game since I was 10 years old. So I'm not about to argue back and forth with nobody that just started watching last year, but just get your WNBA pass, you know, because y'all got all this to say about Caitlin, and Caitlin's a great player. I personally don't think none of these people are going to follow her to the WNBA. I really do not. I don't see them watching the games. I don't see them getting into it because they say, you know, she's not going to be scoring 40 and throwing up these shots like that. And it's not going to be, quote, fans exciting to them because, like I said, they don't really like basketball. They just like spectacle and want to be in the fucking conversation. So I really don't think they're going to follow her to WNBA, all them people. And I don't mean to say it like that. I know people are like, oh, well, Dawn says she's... Listen, Dawn Staley is a diplomat and she's an ambassador for the game and she's been doing that a long time. So she knows what she needs to say. She knows, you know, and actually she's a player's coach. If you a good player, if you a great player, Dawn's going to fuck with you. So, you know, she's going to say great things about Caitlin. She's going to say Caitlin's bringing eyes to the game. That's great. But, you know, I don't know. I'm not quite on a Caitlin Clark train because, number one, I'm not saying she's not good, but she was shut down by a second year in a row. She was shut down by a sophomore playing defense on her, shut her completely down. Last year, she got defense, shut her completely down. I just don't think that she's, I'm not saying she's not good. I just don't think she's, I think she's overrated a bit. Like, because if you, like I said, if you watch college ball like I do, women's college ball, you know them UConn teams with the Taurasi and Sue Bird in them, you couldn't shut them down. You know, the Tennessee teams, you couldn't shut them down. Holzclaw and all them people and Candace and all them, when it was time to play, they played and they put the championship away. You definitely couldn't shut them down with no sophomore. So that's college game. The kind of defense she's going to face in WNBA is going to be way worse than that. I'm not trying to be a hater. I'm really not. I really think Caitlin is overrated. Not saying she's not going to be good. Not saying she can't develop. She can. But I think people are really, you know, oh, the people who the game is boring, it's not a good product, are really have no idea the level, the difference in talent between the NCAA and the WNBA. I don't think people really understand that it's only 12 teams. And so those 12 teams have the best of the best. You take all the elite players and those 12 teams have the best of those. Everybody else is playing overseas or whatever they're doing. So, yeah, I mean, I've been watching the game a long time. I give credit where credit is due. Caitlin's great, but she played for Iowa. She plays in a division that's not have the most competition, and she got shut down 2 years in a row by actual defense, by people just not letting her run wild and take what she wanted to do, just getting in her face and playing solid defense and was shut down. And I don't think that, like last year, nobody was shutting Aaliyah Boston down. This year, nobody was shutting Cardozo and them down. They went and won. Nobody was shutting them down. So, you know, I just think going into the league, we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't mean to be the hater. I just think she's overrated. But anyway, get your WNBA pass since you also went to the game. It's only $7.99 or something like that. Very cheap. You can see all the games you want to see. Go to, if you in the area, I live in New York. Them goddamn New York Liberty tickets be damn near as much as like Mets and Yankees tickets. Actually more. Like, cause you know, I don't like to sit all up in the nosebleeds. You know, get your tickets if you in a region where, you know, it's y'all not championship contenders or y'all not playoffs, it might be a little cheap. You can get Liberty tickets for like, I don't know, $40-$50. You might be up a little high, but you could get them. But, you know, in other places, I think they're more affordable. So just do that. Shut your mouth. Stop talking about Caitlin. Stop making these outrageous statements. If you really want to be a fan like that, go get the WNBA pass and support the game. Where I want to go next? I'll save that for last. What's that? Oh, I just want to say, yo, real quick. So I got a wedding ring. You know, I got married. I got a wedding ring. I wear my wedding ring. And I thought that wearing this wedding ring would alleviate just a lot of bullshit, but like, it's like people be in my face more now with the Ring, the straights, the everybody that want to be, you know, everybody want to be everything nowadays, always in my face. And I was like, God damn, like, leave me alone. Like, I'm not interested. Damn. Like, I thought Rhea and the Ring were going to help, but it don't. No, I just wonder, but I'm getting a little used to it, though. I think last time I talked to y'all, I still wasn't used to it. I don't sleep in it, because I just don't. I think that's doing the most. But I'm getting used to it to the point now where it's not on. I'm like, oh, we're not, and I realize that it's not on. And it doesn't feel as weird on my finger anymore. So it's been about a month or and a half now. So I guess y'all are right about 2 months. So I am getting used to it. All right, so let's get into the meat and potato. What? Meat and potato. Okay, let's start here. It's been a minute now, but OJ died, and OJ did it. And I just want to, if you haven't watched it yet, I know there's a lot of documentaries and a lot of shows on OJ, but about the best one that I've ever seen and about the best, most well-done one out there is OJ Made in America. I can't remember when it came out. I remember it came out in the summer. It was on ESPN 30 or something like that. But I remember a few of us watched it live, but not everybody did. But OJ Made in America is one of the best documentaries, period, and on the OJ case. And I say that because most of the other OJ documentaries or specials or what have you, they just focus on the crime, the trial, the verdict, the aftermath. This one is way more in depth. It starts, it covers so much, so many of the things that you have to understand in order to understand OJ. All the stuff that, like, they was trying to tell Marsha Clark, girl, you can't just present this as a domestic violence case because this, that, it just covers so much. It's so thorough. It goes back to, like, the Great Migration, where Black people started going west, thinking that, okay, we're leaving the Jim Crow South, we're going to sunny California, where everything is sunshine and nice and everything, and we're not going to have to worry about racism, and getting there and finding out that actually it's just as segregated as the South, and a lot of the policemen that were hot, because L.A. was like, you know, the newer town, like 20s, 30s, 40s, that everybody was going west, so they had to hire people to do things. And it turns out that a lot of the police that they were recruiting to go out to LAPD and all of that were from the South, and we know the police in the South were the Klan. So basically, they was just outsourcing the same racist cops that was in Alabama, Mississippi, and Texas, and all these places to go out west. So they going out west to meet the same kind of fucking racism and Jim Crow that they just left. And it starts with that, and it shows how that happened. It shows how the LAPD came up, like how, you know, how they were structured, what their culture was, you know, and it showed, like, OJ, where he was from. And it did all that to show you that, yo, you cannot look at the OJ verdict in a vacuum, because all this other stuff that was going on in LA at the time, they talked about all the police brutality, like the Watts riots, just all the issues that Black residents of Los Angeles had with police and law enforcement over the years. The Watts riots, you know, people getting, women getting shot over by police over phone bills. Like, okay, Latasha Harlins, I remember that case because that girl was my age. It got shot in the back of the head by the Chinese, Korean grocer, and they let the lady off of probation. Like, you killed a child for no reason, and they just let you off of probation. So it was like they showed all the stuff that had been building up prior to the OJ trial. And then, you know, it went into, like, OJ and his background, how he was and how he kind of was, like, I'm gonna just say it, he was kind of like the he was pitted as, you know, back in the 60s and 70s when everybody was Black Power and Tommy and what's the name, held they fists up at the Olympics, the Black Power and all that, Civil Rights Movement, and Jim Brown and all the athletes, Ali and all of them were on the Civil Rights side, and OJ was like the white person's Black, you know, this is the Black person we like. And so they showed all of that. They show how OJ just kind of lost himself in that. They talked to his friends. One of his friends just kept it real the whole time. If you watch it, the guy that's named Ron, he kept it real the whole time. But it's just a really good documentary. And I tell people all the time, like, I did not, I understood why black people were celebrating everything. Well, I ain't gonna say understood, because I didn't. But I got the notion that, hey, y'all been lynching and killing us and shooting us for years and centuries, and just nothing been done. Go, y'all tell us, we go to trial and y'all let them off. Emmett Till, nobody's ever accountable. Y'all can just kill us. Our life don't mean nothing. You can have all the evidence in the world. Rodney King, y'all beat his ass on camera and still said not guilty. So I got that sentiment. And so this one fucking time, one case in the whole history of America where a black man is accused of killing a white woman, he killed the white woman for sure. And your system that you set up, your corrupt ass system, let him off. I understood that, but I could not cheer it. I did not cheer it. And I was very embarrassed of black people cheering it. And I was very, I was just disgusted by it because I knew that he did it. And it's like, I don't care that she's a white woman. I don't really care about any of that. This man was, he abused his first wife who was black. This man was a domestic abuser. He beat that woman nonstop and ended up killing her. And he attacked her so viciously that he almost cut her head off. The coroner said, when you'll see it in the doc, the coroner's her head basically was cut off. It was only held on by a piece of skin. So that when they buried her, they had to put a handkerchief around her neck. And I just couldn't cheer that. I just couldn't. I got it, but I just couldn't. And I felt that people were very, degenerate for cheering it. I really did. I'm sorry. And people, a lot of people say, well, we were young. I get it. I was young too. But I watched the case. I mean, my dad had that shit. This nigga had the shit on all day, every day. But, like, I knew he did it. Like, when you show the evidence, the blood led from her house to his house. He had cuts on his fingers. I mean, he clearly did it. And then when he did it. And I was just like, I can't cheer that. I can't cheer that. And I just really, to this day, I get irritated with people claiming he didn't do it. He did it. He did it. I don't want to hear about the LAPD and they planted evidence. The night of the murder, they went to her house. They jumped the fence. They found the blood. They followed that blood to the curb. They went to OJ's house, followed the blood from his truck up his driveway into the house. The same fucking blood. They can't plant the blood the same night. They can't do it. And it wasn't, and the man wrote a book saying if I did it, but it wasn't, oh, it was drug dealers running through Beverly Hills. It was drug assassins running through Beverly Hills and they killed Nicole Brown Simpson and this dude and nobody else saw them. It was just ludicrous. I knew he did it. And when you watch it, you'll see the jurors that they talk to. And this one lady, this black lady, was just so ignorant to me because I just, and it was just like, well, why wouldn't she leave? How you gonna stay with a man? And the thing is, ma'am, she did leave. She did leave. She was not killed at OJ's house. She was killed at her own house where she had divorced him and left. She was at her own house. And this nigga was where he had been peeping through her windows and hiding in the bushes and trying to see what she was doing. And she called the police over and over and over and would come running out the house in her bra and all sorts of stages of undress, beat up, punched in the eye. And nobody would do anything because, hey, OJ. So, you know, he's dead now. A lot of people, I guess y'all were too young when that shit, I was college age when that shit, I remember my dad, boy, he watched that thing every day. That was the beginning of like 24-hour news, 24-hour TV, court TV, all that. I still remember when they announced that she had been murdered because the way, if you weren't around then, the timeline went like this. OJ had been on the news. He was a newscaster. As far as we knew, he was OJ. We didn't know anything about him beating his wife. We didn't know anything about that. So he was just OJ. No black people. And this is the other thing that irritated me. Black people didn't really fuck with OJ like that because we knew he was one of them niggas. Like, if you was, you know, around in the 67, he was one of them niggas. He was against Ali. He was the white man's dude. So, you know, that's why when people like all of a sudden OJ would, like, he didn't even fuck with y'all. His thing was, I'm not black, I'm OJ. He was one of them niggas, so that always annoyed. But anyway, the timeline was, I can't remember what football game. Well, it was during the NBA finals, so maybe it was basketball, but I know it was like sports on TV. And they came through and they were like, yo, Nicole Brown Simpson, wife of OJ Simpson, and they might have said Ron Goldman, I don't know, had been found murdered. And everyone was like, wow, oh, but we wasn't thinking, we were thinking like, because this is the 90s, again, it was very violent, a lot of violence back then. We thinking, you know, look, niggas still getting killed back then. We think of random violence, right? And then it was like, they said something like, maybe no suspects, or we trying to figure out whatever. And then I remember like it being a gap, like nobody, maybe a couple days, no news. And then I think later it was like, oh, they're seeking OJ for questioning. And, but again, it was kind of like, okay, questioning about like, does he know something, or questioning like what they never said, like he was really a suspect. When the shit really hit the fan is the day that we all, if you were around that day, probably ingrained in our mind and never forget, when the news broke in and said that OJ Simpson was missing and on the run, and they could not locate him. They didn't know where he was, fled the country. That was the state. And then all of a sudden, I guess they located him because they cut in, and that's when you saw the white Bronco chase. And that was them following OJ when he was in the back of the car with the gun to his head, was going to kill himself. Look, fleeing is evidence of guilt. Another thing, right? But that was the timeline, and I'll never forget it because I had been coming back. I had went to the movies. I was when was this, 95? So yeah, I was about 23, 22, something like that. And I had went to the movies with one of my ex-boyfriend from high school, Troy. Me and him went to the movies. We went to see what was that joint? Wolfman, I think. The one with, I don't know. I might be lying. It was either that or Jurassic Park. I can't remember. It wasn't the movies. Whatever the big movie in 95 was, that's what we went to see. And we went all the way out fucking, where we go? Past Willow Grove. That theater way out there. I can't remember what it's called now. But we were coming back. And we had just got back to the house, to my house, my dad's house. And it was on the TV. And I was like, my dad was sitting in the kitchen, and we had the downstairs, we had the TV in the kitchen, we had a TV in the den. So he was in the kitchen, and since we came in, the den was closer to the door, so we heard him, like, we like, what's going on? He was like, yo, OJ running. So we went and then turned the TV on and was watching it, and it was, like, so surreal. Like, I'll never forget that day, watching this dude and this Bronco cutting into the NBA Finals. But anyway, you know, that's it. Look, OJ, end of an era. If you still think OJ is innocent, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe read his book called If I Did It, where he talks about how he did it. Maybe that'll help convince you. I don't know. But, you know, he died. Apparently, he had cancer, and they cremated him. And, you know, look, I don't got nothing else to say about it. I know he killed that lady. If you watch OJ Made in America, it's one of the best documented. It won an Oscar, I believe, or Emmy. It might have won both, actually. That's how good it was, and it was well deserved. It's so well done. It's like, I think five parts, or maybe, yeah, I think it's five parts, but it's like an hour and a half each part. It is. I got my wife watching it. It's really, really good. It's excellent. When you end of that, you'll know everything that happened with OJ. And if you were somebody that cheered that verdict, hopefully you'll be ashamed at the end, because you really cheered this man beating and killing his wife and getting away with it. And I get the whole racial thing, but, you know, it was to cheer. It was just a lot for me. It was a lot. And I just really felt, I was just ashamed of black people on that day. And I didn't care who knew it. And I just was real disappointed, because I'm like, all right, you know, that's the kind of people we are. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. I get what y'all saying. And yeah. But, like, that woman is dead, and she didn't do anything to anybody. She's an innocent woman, and the mother of his children, and he just killed her. I mean, cut her head off, stabbed this other dude to death. And then that's the second thing. So now they're talking about, they're trying to get on Ron Goldman, talking about he needs to let it go, because apparently he doesn't want, now that OJ is dead and his estate is out there, he doesn't want the kids to his OJ's kids to be able to get any more of that money. People are like, oh my God, why can't he leave it alone? His kids are innocent. Bitch, why the fuck would I let your kids live off of money after you that are is owed to me because I couldn't get justice in the criminal court? So I had to go sue you in the civil court, and they gave me this judgment for you killing my motherfucking daughter and sister and whoever else, cutting her damn near head off. Why the fuck would I let your grown ass kids get that money? Like, what the fuck? People, I don't know. People got audacity, boy. I'm like, how y'all gonna blame him for that? I don't care if that nigga dead. He owed us money. He killed my daughter. He never paid it. He owed us motherfucking money. We never couldn't go after his pension, so he lived a nice, comfortable life, and we still got the oldest money, and my daughter dead, and I don't give a fuck about your grown-ass kids. You must be crazy. People got audacity, boy. All right. Next, and I didn't even want to talk about this, but I am because I got on here when Gerard Carmichael did his Rothaniel Netflix special, and I talked about how great it was and how much I loved it, and I stand by that. I still thought that special was great. I still loved it, but that's when I didn't know as much about that nigga as I do now. He has this reality show. I don't even know what it's called. Now, let me tell y'all, because let me see. Gerard Carmichael reality show. Hold on. Carmichael. And I got to give shout out. Hold on. Let me. Reality show. Here we go. It's on HBO Max and it's called. Oh, it's called Gerard Carmichael reality show. Okay. It's on HBO Max. And I got to give shout out to Lou, because Lou pegged this nigga from the beginning. And I ain't agree with him when he was calling him a black OK. And he know what kind of dude he is from that Rothaniel special. And I was like, eh. And I like the special, but I got to give credit where credit is due. And he did peg that motherfucker. And I don't like this nigga. I don't like him. I'm going to just say it. Because I what I thought was being introspective and being open, I now realize is some bullshit, and that nigga need to go talk to the lady, because this it's like he tells a story about, you know, him being gay, his family rejected him, his father cheating on his mother, having all these side families, and him protecting his father and all this shit he did. Which, okay, but you're not the only nigga that had that experience, I promise you. And it seemed like this reality show is just him trying to humiliate and embarrass his parents as much as possible with his white boyfriend and his gayness. And normally, because I want to choose my words carefully here, it's not that. Normally, I would be all for that. I ain't gonna lie. Like, normally, if, like, you have, you know, your parents are homophobic and they don't support you, and here you are successful and they live in all. It's okay to joke them a little bit. It's okay to rib them a little bit. It's okay to bring that up. Like, oh, y'all never accepted me. This is what I felt. This is how y'all made me feel, you know, but I'm successful. I get it. But he's going beyond that. And it's like he's literally trying, I feel, in my opinion, to literally just embarrass his family and humiliate his family and make them pay for all the transgressions that they have done against him, which I'm not saying that it's wrong to have that feeling, and it's not wrong to feel that way. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying to put it on film, I'm gonna just go ahead and say what I mean. For these white people, because that's what it's about. Because like I said before, we see the creatives that get the chances. We see the creatives get the opportunities. Only these certain kind of blacks that are gonna fucking do shit that depict black people in a certain way and only a certain way. Make us the band of the jokes. Make us the ones that don't get it. Make us the too sensitive. Make us the, you know, whatever it is. Whatever the stereotype that these special blacks think. That's what the material is given. And just to have drag your parents out like this, like, if, don't get me wrong, like, I thought you skewered them enough in the special, honestly, in Rothaniel. Now you go, and I don't even know why they signed off on this shit, honestly. I wouldn't have signed off on this shit, but I don't like it. I don't like it. It's very like, nigga, you grown. Either you gonna forgive your parents or you don't. And if you don't, you don't have to. But like, this is not it. Like, it's like, I can't. He went on the Breakfast Club, and I'm so glad he did, because it vindicated what I keep trying to tell y'all when he said, oh, well, because he was trying to explain the fetish thing he was saying with this dude is like, which I got to give credit to Lou. He was like, you know, he likes to be fetishized by white boys. And I was like, he just probably likes white boys. But nope, he likes to be fetishized. And so he thought that was just something so clever to say. And black people was like, man, get the fuck out of here with that shit. And so he goes on the Breakfast Club and try to explain. Because, you know, these black creatives, these bozos, they always think they just so much smarter than us. And we just don't get it. And he just needs to explain because it's over your head and you're not getting our point. And he goes on there and he says he's usually the smartest person in the room. And I said, bam, that's what I keep telling y'all. What have I told y'all? These motherfuckers are not as smart as they think they are. Their content is not as deep as they think it is, and it is not going over anybody's head. The problem is, and I include Dave Chappelle and all these other dudes in there too, the problem is you're not as smart as you think you are, and your audience is smarter than you think they are, and they're smarter than you because you are trying to be the elevated intellectual black comedian or artist or whatever it is. And so you're attracting crowds who are looking for that, but then you get in front of them and they realize that, oh, wait a minute, you're not really that bright. You really saying some bullshit. It sounds clever to people who don't know anything. It sounds clever to people who are dumb. It sounds clever to people who are not, don't get the levels of what's going on here. That really what you're saying, really what you're trying to say is that black people are stupid, black people are dumb, black people too sensitive, gay people are too sensitive. You're really just repeating white people talking points. But the people that you usually around, they stupid or they dumb, so they don't know that. So they really think you're really smart, but you're getting in front of audiences who don't. And it's not that your material is not up to par. It's not what you think it is. It's that we dumb or we too sensitive or we don't get it. And that's what I've been telling y'all about these motherfuckers. And I'm glad he said that. That's what I've been telling y'all. These motherfuckers think they're smarter than they are. Bro, I'm not the smartest person in the world, but the shit that I thought was real deep at 19, I don't think that anymore. And your jokes, getting up on stage and calling people alphabet people and gays. In fact, that's, you think it's cutting edge, but it's not. It's old. It's played. It's nothing different than what white people do anyway, but they're using you as a proxy. And you think because you're black that you're saying something clever and that people looking at you like, hey, bro, that's actually not funny. We too sensitive. And I'm glad he said that, because that's what they all do. I'm trying to tell y'all, all these motherfuckers putting out this bullshit ass content, this whack ass content, this, yo, what the fuck is this shit ass? Why is everything from a white lens? Why is everything bouncing off of white people? Because y'all motherfuckers are obsessed with white people. You did not grow up in the environment that we did. We're like, hey, man, we didn't really give a fuck about white people. We didn't care what they thought, because we was fly. They was trying to get into our shit, because we were the one making all the fly shit. They was on the edges. We didn't give a fuck about being accepted. We didn't even really want them in our spaces. We didn't grow up like that. We being Gen X. We being the people, kids in the 80s and 90s that built this shit. Like, we didn't give a fuck about that. And I'm so glad he said that, because that's all this new black shit. That's what it is. Oh, I'm going to get up on stage and I'm going to say this. I'm going to say the Bill Maher sarcastic shit, but I'm black. And if you say, oh, no, I'm black, you guys just don't get it. Nigga, we get it. You're not that smart, bruh. You're not that smart. Used to being around dummies. Used to being out motherfuckers to think you a genius. You're the smartest nigga in the room, but you're not the smartest nigga here, bruh. You not. And that's the chance. That's the risk you take when you try to do this highbrow comedy. You want to be the smarty-arty nigga? Okay, well, your audience is smarty-arty too, except your audience is a little bit more advanced than you, and that's why they're not fucking with your jokes. And that's why the people that's laughing at you are the ones that, again, not quite as bright as you, not quite as sharp as you. They don't understand why that shit is not really funny. So I'm like, boom, he expressed what I've been saying, and people be arguing back and forth. Oh, well, just because you don't like it, you don't have to listen to it. I'm like, I don't listen to it. That's not my argument. I don't listen to it. My argument is stop getting up on, y'all are not doing what you think you're doing. You're getting up there, you're saying racist shit, you're saying right wing shit, you're saying white man shit, and that is what keeps getting greenlit, because all these dummies will go there and laugh at it and think it's funny and it makes money. And so that's all we gonna see. And y'all trying to act like y'all doing something so enlightening, and y'all really taking us back. That's my beef. I'm not gonna watch shit I don't think it's funny. You ain't got to tell me. I don't watch it. I told y'all, I ain't watched Dave since that first special because I seen what it is. I'm like, okay, this nigga gonna make, okay, he's gonna keep doubling down on the trans shit. Regardless of how you feel about it, nigga, you're whack. Okay, because you got people explaining to you exactly what the issue is, and you just want to keep making your point, just like a white man. Oh, you're too sensitive. Oh, you're like, get out of here with that bullshit. So, Gerard Carmichael, same shit. I don't like you, nigga. I didn't like you with how you handled the Will Smith thing, and now I see the kind of, like, I don't like you. Like, if you want to like white boys, fine. But, like, that shit, like, nobody wants to see that. Like, well, nobody black, y'all not putting on for the people. That's all I'm gonna say. Y'all not putting on for the people. Y'all shit is whack. We see what you're doing. We see this shit is for white people, about white people. What makes white people oh, look, he's the black guy making all the other blacks uncomfortable, saying the shit that we wanna say, but we'll get called racist. That's all y'all doing. Cornball shit. Nigga, you on TV in 2024 with all the shit that's going on with them getting rid of affirmative action and trying to take it, and you on here sucking some white man's feet on the camera? Are you fucking serious? Like, who was this supposed to be entertaining for? This supposed to be cutting edge? This supposed to be deep, you fucking coon? I don't like that nigga. I don't like that nigga. Yeah, that's he need to go talk to the lady. That show was terrible. Oh, I crossed up the wrong thing. That show was terrible, and I just don't like that nigga. And rolling off of that topic, let's roll into the next one. Yo, you millennials, y'all getting on my motherfucking last motherfucking nerve. Y'all are so fucking annoying on Twitter. Jill Scott got on Twitter yesterday or the day before and was praising Chris Brown's music and this, that, and the other, and saying basically the same shit they keep saying, why we keep picking on Chris Brown. Every time this comes up, people let them know, we're not picking, we're not this, we're not that. And I have said this before, I am a firm member of Gen X. I am born right in the middle of Gen X. I'm not on the cusp. I'm not on the wisp. I'm dead in the middle of Gen X. I am Gen Xer, ride or die. That is my generation. I wasn't born close to the 70s. I wasn't born close to the 80s. I'm sorry. Gen X starts in, 65. I can't remember. Whenever it starts, I'm right in the middle. Okay. And I have said before, because again, we're the ones that did hip hop. We're the ones that were coming up in the 90s. We were 18, 19, 20 in the 90s when hip hop was being what it was. And so we were there for it live. And I have always said that when all this Me Too and Diddy stuff start breaking, I was like, look, it's a lot of Gen X, my generation, women who are very misogynistic, who are very man-centered, and who are very just problematic. And that's why that shit was able to fester for so long. That's why I was able to slide past for so long, because you had so many women enabling it. You had so many women with the attitude that, well, that's them hoes, not me. Shouldn't have been in that position. Well, you should know. Like, very, very toxic. And I have always said that. I said, man, one thing about Gen X, I give us our credit, and I'll let nobody talk shit about us, but that is one thing that has always irritated me about us, and never gets spoken about enough. And so my friend the other day on Twitter, in response to Jill Scott tweet, who is also a member of Gen X along with Erykah Badu and Taraji P. Henson and a lot of these people that we see doing this problematic shit with these dudes or making problematic statements, all Gen X. So she said, hey, I hate to say it, but, you know, because it's talking about me, but Gen X, we have a real problem with toxicity and this man-centered stuff and this misogynistic stuff, and that's why we keep making, that's why Jill and them keep making these type of statements. That's what she said, and I agreed, and a whole lot of people in our generation agree. Then, of course, we had some people jumping, that's not Gen X, that's not me, that's not, now say it's all of us. Nobody said it was all of you. Nobody said it was all of you. She said specifically Gen X is particularly egregious. We all know that it's across all age groups, duh, but it's particularly egregious. And for 3-4 days now, everybody has turned it into, if y'all think that's limited to one generation, how about the young girls and this is why we can't get it out? Nobody fucking said that. Shut the fuck up. Y'all are so fucking annoying. Y'all want to be included in every fucking thing. Oh, well, it's us. I'm toxic too. Nobody is talking about you. We didn't say anything about you. We are talking about Gen X specifically, of which we are a group. We're talking about ourselves. We are talking about how we are. How we are and how problematic it is that we are and how we are especially egregious in that area. Talking about us, we're not talking about you. Nobody said, oh, it's just us. The statement was Gen X, of which Jill Scott is a member, who we were talking about, is especially egregious with this. A lot of people, women our age, still have those attitudes. Not all of us. Quite a few of us have done the work, but not enough, because it's still like every time Cosby, Jonathan Majors, R. Kelly, every time these issues come up, it is that subset of us that have the largest quotient of being problematic and loud and proud about it. That was what the statement was. Every time somebody say something, and y'all, oh, well, we start generation wars. No, we're not. It's not a generation war. Nobody said it was a generation war. Nobody said it was a war. Nobody mentioned y'all at fucking all. It's only a war because you want to be a part of something, because you want to make something about you, because everything got to be the fuck about y'all, and y'all are so fucking annoying with that shit. Nobody fucking said you. You're not in the conversation. Sit the fuck down and be quiet. If you want to talk about what you do, fine. But we're talking about this right now. Y'all get on my fucking nerves. The same shit that I said with every time somebody says this generation or that. Oh, we turned into it. No, it was we. Nobody talking to y'all. Ever talking to y'all. Ever talking about y'all. Y'all have to insert yourself into every fucking conversation. It's so goddamn annoying. Nobody said it was only Gen X. What they said was this group of women have it the worst. It's very egregious. We're very loud. It's always an issue. We're always on the wrong side. Yes, there are some that have done the work, but not enough. That conversation did not have to go. Y'all still talk about that shit. Oh, we know the young girls had. Nobody said they didn't. Shut the fuck up. Y'all are so fucking annoying. Y'all will turn any fucking topic into something that can be about you. So you can have something to say. So you can say how somebody else don't know what they're talking about. Girl, shut the fuck up. Y'all are so fucking annoying. Oh my God, we can't stand y'all. I hate to say it, but like, we can't fucking stand y'all. This shit like that. Shut the fuck up. Sometimes. Everything ain't about you. Just because somebody say I like oranges, it don't mean they don't like peaches. You don't gotta bring all the peaches in the world and start arguing about how it ain't just oranges, it's peaches. Nobody fucking said it. Get the fuck out of here. Oh, y'all are annoying. Y'all are fucking annoying, my God. I just had to get that off my chest. That shit, I usually don't let shit bother me, but it's like, yo, if a motherfucker is talking about a specific cohort of which they are a member and saying how we have to do better because we doing real bad and everybody doing bad, but we are especially doing bad because we are really egregious with it, because every time this shit come up, it seemed to be us that be the loudest and the wrongest. I don't know why you feel like you got to jump in and say your generation is bad at it too. Who give a fuck? And we ain't talking about y'all. Ain't nobody talking about y'all. Nobody care about y'all. Nobody talking about y'all. Nobody mention y'all. You could either agree, not agree, or you can shut the fuck up. But the topic was Gen X. The topic wasn't none of the rest of y'all. So we don't understand why y'all got to bring all this other shit in there. That's not what we were saying. Nobody said it was only us. Duh. Oh my God. I just had to get that off my chest, y'all. Oh, y'all are annoying. Oh my God. Okay. Moving on. All right. So that's really all. I had a couple other things to say, but I crossed them off the list because I didn't really feel like it. So I do want to go on to tell y'all about shit I'm watching, and it's a couple things. So I started back watching. So I think I told y'all this last season. I started back watching Amazing Race and Survivor. I had stopped watching both of them because I felt like they started getting a little too overproduced. I don't like when the shows, you know, they start getting popular. You know, a lot of people watching, they start like doing silly shit, and it's like too. It's just too overly produced. But the last couple seasons, I mean, they're still like more produced than they used to be, but they've gotten better contestants, and it's just I can watch it now. So the last season I watched it, this season I'm watching it again. This season is funny. They got some people on it this season. They got this one girl that swears she running the game. She's so fucking clueless. And the Amazing Race, same thing. So I started watching them again. I don't know if y'all ever watched Survivor and enjoyed it and want to get back into it, you might want to do it this season. It's pretty good. The other thing I want to recommend is, I already told y'all about Samurai on FX. Everybody, I feel like, caught on to that. So Netflix has this thing called Jail. It's called something, Lock Up Jail Experiment or something like that. But basically what it is this warden in this jail. And this is like a high security violent felon jail, which makes it extra interesting. He's trying to do an experiment. But basically, he like wants the jail to run better. He wants the outcomes to be better. He wants to try to get recidivism down. He's like, you know, I want y'all to be more, we want y'all to come out of here better than when you went in. And so we trying to do all kind of stuff. And he was like over in Europe, you know, where they have their recidivisms down and the rehabilitation is a little bit higher. They do their jails a little different. So we're going to try to do that here and see if it works out. And it's up to y'all. So basically we're going to, instead of having like guards here all day and y'all in y'all cells 23 hours a day and all of that, we're going to have the doors open. We just going to have the guards, you know, supervising, but y'all going to be in here by yourselves. Running it yourselves. And it's just very interesting because it's like all these inmates up in there, and like they on the first day they already punched each other in the face. Some of them want to do it. I mean, they all kind of want to do it, I guess, because they've been locked down their cells 23 out of 24 hours. So of course being out is preferred, but it's like people got different ideas on how to do it. It's the old inmates versus the young inmates. Anyway, it's really interesting. It's interesting if you interested in stuff like that. But the second one I want to recommend, Ripley. Ripley on Netflix is a redo of The Talented Mr. Ripley, but they changed some things. First of all, it's all filmed in black and white. Second of all, like some of the plot is different than in the original. It is very, very well done. It is very well shot. It is very well done. I'm waiting for my detective crew to watch it so we can discuss, because it's so many things I want to talk about. Like, dude, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you just do that? It's the same movie, so I'm not giving nothing away. It's basically Tom Ripley is hired to go. This is the one thing I always wanted to say about The Talented Mr. Ripley that I thought, because this one, like I said, it changes the plot a little bit, and it adds some things that the other one didn't. I was hoping one of the things it would add. One of the things I always wanted to know from both the movies, I always hoped that they would show, because it's clear in the movie when Tom gets to gets over there to meet Dickie, that Dickie doesn't know who he is. Like, and it's implied that Tom wasn't really his friend. Like, he never really knew the dude. But they never explained that. And I always was I always wanted them to show, you know, did he actually know him? Was it the wrong Tom Ripley? Like, what made his father think that he knew Dickie? Because it's pretty clear that he didn't, right? Dickie's rich. This guy's not. He's like a broke con man. Like, and it's like, why would they be in the same circle? So I always wondered. So this one didn't address that either. But you know, so he comes over, and the premise of the movie is Dickie's father. Dickie's like this rich kid. He's over in Europe on this trust fund, and his dad wants him to come back and like run the business, just come back. I guess he's been over there for some years. They can't convince him to come back. So he sends Tom over there because he thinks Tom's his friend. And he was like, look, I'm gonna pay expenses, I'm gonna pay your salary, go over there, try to convince my son to come back. When he gets over there, it's clear that the son's not coming back. But Ripley like gets enamored with this rich. It's kind of like if you saw the Single White Female, it's kind of like that, where Ripley starts to be enamored with Dickie. You can't really tell, does he love Dickie? Does he want to be Dickie? But he clearly gets enamored of this rich life and doesn't want to leave. And so Tom ends up killing Dickie and taking over his identity. But the way the movie plays out is like people don't really know what's going on, and they can't really, it seems to be like, Dickie's missing. They don't really know like what happened. So, I mean, that's, if you've seen the movie, you know the plot, but this is really well done. They change a few things. The guy that played, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character in the first movie is played by a totally different character. And he plays the character totally different. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman did it way better, but this guy does it equally nice. It's just, it pales in comparison to, Philip Seymour Hoffman, the way he played it. But, it's really good. It's really well done. The change that they make, you don't mind it because they make them well and it fits in the movie, and the little plot changes work out well. It's all filmed in black and white, but it's filmed beautifully. Oh my God, the cinematography is great. It's really well done. You keep thinking he's going to get caught. He doesn't get caught. It's this one scene though where I'm like, where he's pretending to be Ripley, because, you know, like, he's pretending to be Dickie in some places, and then when he goes to other places, he has to go back and be Tom, because people know that he's not Dickie or whatever. So, but there's this one scene where he's pretending to be Dickie, and I was like, man, now, come on, sir. You're supposed to be a detective, and you can't tell what's going on here. So, but it's really good. It's really well done. It's all the performances are great. Dakota Fanning is great. The guy that plays Dickie, I don't know who he is, but he's good. The guy that plays Tom is excellent. The guy that plays Ripley is excellent. It's really, really, really good. So if you haven't watched it yet, you should watch it. It's well worth it. And then there's a couple other things that I'm way behind on my programs that I haven't watched yet. I'll come back and let y'all know about them. I had something suggested for me, but I'm going to be real with y'all. I don't trust Twitter's TV taste, because y'all be recommending some bullshit. I did check that Under the Bridge, that new series with old girl that played in Killers of the Flower Moon. I saw the first episode. I'm going to be real. It was giving a little bit too, I don't know, it didn't really hook me in. I'll watch the second episode and see what it is, but it was a little bit too, I don't know, network TV ish for me. Like, okay, I see what this is going to be. And then it's like, okay, so who really killed her? It was just giving like a little Twin Peaks type feel, which, you know, I've seen Twin Peaks. Like, I know what that's going to be, so I don't know. I'm going to give it a second chance. I'm going to watch the second episode just to see, but I was like, hey, I don't know if this, I'm going to watch this. Yeah, that's it. So, oh, look at that. Right on time. I did not go over. So, you know, like me, rate me, rating me high helps me get up in the algorithm, helps other people listen. I'm a day late. I apologize for that, but I am getting back on track. Like I said, I'll have y'all waiting weeks and weeks. Thanks for listening. Tell a friend, you know, and God bless. See y'all next week. Peace.